I call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:37 p.m. on Thursday, April 22nd, 2021. Present in the room today are Representative Thompson, Representative Carpenter, Representative Lebon, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Rasmussen, Representative Josephson, Representative Wool, Representative Johnson, and myself, Co-Chair Merrick. This afternoon, we will hear public testimony on House Bill 92, borrowing in anticipation of revenue, and continue considering amendments to House Bills 79 and 80. My goal is to pass House Bills 79 and 80 out of committee today. We will start considering House Bill 92, borrowing in anticipation of revenue. The committee last heard this bill on April 16th. Commissioner Mahoney, do you have any opening comments before we begin?
Through the chair, I have no opening except to encourage listeners and the group to seriously consider this to help Alaska.
Great, thank you very much. Are there questions from the committee? Seeing none, I will open public testimony. Is there anyone in the room or online wishing to testify on House Bill 92, borrowing in anticipation of revenue? Seeing no one, I'm going to close public testimony. Next, we'll go over the fiscal notes. We have Pam Leary from the Department of Revenue to review the fiscal note, OMB component 121. And we just received an updated fiscal note. Do we have the control number for that? 121, thank you. Ms. Leary?
On the line, this is Pam. This is Pam Leary from the Treasury Division. Can you hear me okay?
We can. I'm gonna take a brief at ease, please.
Sure.
House Finance back on the record. Ms. Leary, we just received the updated fiscal note, so if you could please go over it for us.
Great, thank you. For the record, this is Pam Leary, Director of the Treasury. The HB 92 proposed legislation updates the current statute, which is AS 43.08, to clarify that borrowing in anticipation of revenue collections includes entering into other forms of short-term borrowing, such as line of credit agreements, as well as revenue anticipation notes. Fees paid would be offset by allowing state funds to continue to be invested in earning revenues rather than being borrowed to cover cash flow needs. This fiscal note updates the former fiscal note, which was originally a zero fiscal note, but as we went through the determinations of what it would cost versus revenues that would be offset, it seemed that because we did not know exactly what those costs were or what the revenues would be offsetting those, then an indeterminate fiscal note would be more appropriate. And it also allowed us to recognize the fact that there would be some cost associated with borrowing, but that there is an offset that is anticipated.
Thank you, Ms. Leary. Are there questions regarding the fiscal note? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we would be paying a fee to have access to a line of credit. Is that correct?
Ms. Leary?
That is correct, through the chair.
We have any idea what kind of expense that is?
Through the chair, we had provided some hypothetical examples in the presentation that was made on April 16th, and the fees ranged from commercial paper of 0.8%, line of credit 0.55%, based on a 12-month estimate of a hypothetical $100 million borrowed. So there's quite some variability in terms of negotiations and how long and what type of vehicle would be used, but there is some cost associated with it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as a follow-up to the questions posed by Representative Thompson, looking at the basic two options, capital market products and bank market-funded products, is one product group easier to obtain as far as the mechanics of placing the line of credit versus another? So in my thinking, securing a revolving line of credit would be the quickest and easiest pathway to follow.
Ms. Leary? Ms. Leary?
Oh, I'm sorry, I had you on mute.
That's okay.
Representative Lebon through the chair. That is correct. There is definitely a structure that you can put into place with a bank as opposed to having some syndicate that might take time to develop. So with lines of credit, you could establish the line of credit and access it as needed.
Quick follow-up.
Yes,
thank
follow
you,
up?
Madam Chair. So it would not only probably be cheaper as far as a origination fee, but also quicker and easier to establish. And typically, I guess this is a comment part, where the revolving line of credit would have annual renewal. Is that what you're anticipating?
Through the chair, Representative Lebon, it is not quite clear yet whether we would choose a line of credit or a different financing structure. I think it would depend on the current position we were in and what the needs we were anticipating the money for. But as a general cash flow perspective, yes, I would think we would do a line of credit and build in some type of annual renewal.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Leary. And if there's no other questions, we will go ahead and set this aside. Amendments for House Bill 92 will be due to my office by 6 p.m. this evening. Next, we'll move on to House Bill 79, Saltwater Sport Fishing Operators Guides. There are two amendments before the committee and one conceptual amendment. At the last hearing on Tuesday, we accepted Amendment 1 and had rolled Amendment Number 2. Representative Wohl, is there a motion on amendment number 2?
I move amendment number 2.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Amendment number two, as you may recall, doubles the fee for a out-of-state guide operator or operator for fishing. And this parallels a statute in big game, AS0801065, I believe, that allows for out-of-state big game guides to be charged twice as much for their guiding license as a Alaska resident. We were on the phone with Ledge Legal. At the time, they weren't sure if there was a statute for hunting, which I've since found one. They still might say it's unconstitutional, can be challenged. The big game one hasn't been challenged. So as it stands, the amendment would mimic the law for big game guides. And this would be for fishing.
Thank you, Representative Wohl. Are there questions? Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The last meeting that we had on this, we had a couple concerns that were raised regarding the legality as well as the definition of resident and non-resident. We worked with Ledge Legal and Department of Law, and I would like to move conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two to clear up some of the issues that were raised.
I will object for purpose of discussion. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This new language will replace current amendment number two and allow for the department to implement a non-resident surcharge as necessary for sport fish licensees. In speaking with both Ledge Legal and the Department of Law, they do not see any constitutional issues with the language in the conceptual amendment. This language is similar to the language contained in Alaska Statute 16.43.160, commercial fishing license fees. And again, it allows for the Department of Fish and Game to establish a non-resident surcharge by regulation, uses existing fish and game language for the residency requirements and definition. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Could Representative Rasmussen reread the site, 16.43? Could
0.160.
And we'll ask folks if they can get a little closer to their mic today. They were having a hard time hearing online. So with that, Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I appreciate the amendment to the amendment. And we, Ledge Legal, as I said, was concerned about the constitutionality. Department of Law has seen the amendment to the amendment. I guess my question is, is this an amendment to the actual amendment, or is this amending the bill? Because the amendment has two pages, and this is citing page three, page four. It looks like it's amending the bill and not amending the amendment.
Representative Rasmussen.
Brief at ease.
House Finance back on the record. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The conceptual amendment needed to have one line above it that deletes the material from the prior amendment and inserts the new amended version. And I believe that the amendment sponsor for amendment number two had a question.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I really just want, you know, the effect. I don't care whose amendment we use. This, because the amendment from Representative Rasmussen amends the bill, doesn't amend my amendment. So it might, the title might have to be changed or something. But I guess my question is, and maybe it'll edge legal, or is this, does this make it optional? The department shall establish the annual non-resident surcharge by regulation at an amount that is close as practical by the maximum allowed by law. So I was looking to double the fee, which I believe is the maximum allowed by law. And if this says shall, that means the department shall do it and set up this non-resident surcharge. Is that something the department can do easily in regulation, or is that going to take a lot of work? And maybe the department can answer that. I don't know.
Commissioner? Welcome back.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Doug Vincent Lang. So I'm trying to follow through on what's happening here. So we have a conceptual amendment to an amendment. The way I read this is that, I'm reading the primary language in the bottom, in addition to the annual base fee required for a sport fishing guide license, sport fishing guide operator license, or sport fishing operator and guide combined license under that statute, a non-resident shall pay an annual non-resident surcharge for the issuance or renewal of a license under those two sections. The department shall establish the annual non-resident surcharge by regulation at an amount that is close as practical to the maximum allowed by law. So I guess that the way I read that is that the surcharge is dependent upon me as commissioner setting that by regulation. And you're giving that authority to do that by regulation.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I wasn't party to the drafting of this amendment, so I don't, I'm assuming Ledge Legal, assuming what you read and what I read, we understand. And I guess my question is you, is this something that can be done fairly easily, fairly quickly, or is it, you know, many meetings and hours of debate or anything like that?
It would, through the chair, it would open, we would use the Administrative Procedures Act to do a regulatory change. So anybody would be able to comment on that regulatory change, but it would go through the regulatory, the Administrative Procedures Act to make that regulatory change.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But is it debatable? Could someone say, someone in the department say, well, I think this is unfair, I don't think we should do this, or for whatever reason. I mean, I know it says shall, so it means, I guess, that you have to do it. Is that, and maybe that's a ledge legal question, I don't know.
I understand that I shall do it, but I guess, again, it goes through a regulatory process, and the outcome of that regulatory process is dependent upon what we hear in terms of public comment. I guess I could, I'm just be honest here, I shall do something to the, as close, by regulation amount that is close as practicable to the maximum extent allowed by law. So there would be a requirement for me to go back and define what is the maximum allowed by law, and then I could go, I would have to be as close to that as possible in defining that amount.
Follow up, I guess I just have a comment. Is Ledge Legal on the line?
They just got on the line, Representative Wohl.
Okay, great. Because
welcome back, Mr. Bullard.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the House Finance Committee. This is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal.
Yes, did you hear Representative Wohl's question?
No, forgive me. I just logged on. I wasn't able to hear the question.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And obviously you drafted this amendment to the amendment, although it looks like it amends the bill and it doesn't amend my amendment. But my question is, this is a regulatory action. It's not statutory. By the language, the department shall establish the annual non-resident surcharge by regulations amount that is closest practicable to the maximum allowed by law, which my understanding of maximum is two times resident is the maximum for non-resident. And the commissioner says it would go through the regulatory process, there'd be public comment, and I'm not sure he's able to guarantee the outcome. And does this leave the outcome in possible question if it goes through this process?
Representative Wall, through the chair, this puts the onus on the department to figure out what extra burden non-resident sport fishing guides and sport fishing operators will pose the department, and what amount that these non-resident individuals don't contribute towards the state sport fishing regime. That is the legal amount that the Alaska Supreme Court has determined that we can charge as an additional charge to that we charge residents for the practice of, for the purposes of practicing a profession within our borders.
Representative Wall.
Yeah, thank you. That doesn't give me the answer I wanted, because I just want to double the fees. And as we discussed the other day, I think you questioned the constitutionality. But AS 08.01.065, the big game, big game statute, says in law we will charge twice as much for an out-of-state big game guide. So I was just paralleling that for fishing. It's in law. I suppose it's challengeable, like anything is challengeable. I don't know that to save $100 someone's going to bring up a lawsuit, or $200 maybe. So me personally, I'd be willing to roll the dice and go with my First Amendment. The second one, if they have to determine how much more it costs the state to have an out-of-state guide, that'd be negligible, if anything at all. So, and hunting, I don't believe did that. They just doubled it. So I know we have different rates for out-of-state people fishing than in-state people fishing, and they've somehow come up with a dollar amount that it costs the state more because we have to manage the fish. And the out-of-state people don't pay for that. In-state people, although we don't pay a tax, I assume we pay for it in some way, shape, or form. But there's a lot more people buying out-of-state fishing licenses than out-of-state fishing guide licenses, so the number is pretty small. I guess with that all being said, I think I would rather just stick to my amendment and roll the dice on lawsuits, seeing as there's already a statute that does the same thing for big game.
Thank you. Let the record reflect we've been joined by Representative Edgman. Mr. Bullard, would you like to comment on Representative Wool's comments?
Through the chair, once again, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. I just, in terms of the legal analysis, it's really irrelevant what else exists in statute. It's what the court will do with a particular statute if it's challenged. The language that's used in this amendment, if you're looking at an amendment in the top right-hand corner that's entitled 32-GH1608/B3, this language that's brought directly over from the language that we use for non-resident commercial fishing guides. And this language is the result of previous legal challenges. And that's why I think in this particular situation, it has a greater chance of being upheld than a statute that just simply provides that the license fee may be double or is double.
Thank you. Commissioner.
Yeah, there's another, this is Doug Vincent Lang, Commissioner of Fishing again. Another thing that worries me a little bit in this language is that the department shall establish the, quote, annual non-resident surcharge. I take that to mean I would have to annually determine what that surcharge would be that would be as close as practicable to the maximum extent allowed by law. So I couldn't set a surcharge for 10 years without an annual review of that and trying to make it as close as practicable to the maximum extent allowed by law. So to me, this would be an annual regulatory process that I would have to do.
Mr. Bullard, is that how you read that as well?
Through the chair, members of the committee, it would require the annual surcharge to be determined at an amount that is close to law. If the department believed that nothing had changed in terms of the costs posed by non-residents or so forth, there's no reason that they would have to change it. I don't know. I can't speak to what length the department might have to go to determine that.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I think that it's being exaggerated a little bit on the burden that this would place on the department. It should be relatively simple to identify any surcharge that a non-resident would need to pay, as it is done for the commercial fishing license fees, and it would be pretty reasonable to just mirror that, I would think, legally. But I'm definitely not comfortable just unfortunately rolling the dice and supporting legislation that could bring a potential lawsuit. So I guess I can withdraw the conceptual amendment at this point and then hopefully move an individual amendment after this is voted on.
Thank you. We have a comment or question from Representative Josephson.
Yes, a quick question for Mr. Bullard and then Commissioner. Through the chair, Mr. Bullard, when the department, Commissioner Vincent Lang, establishes the surcharge, as he's required to do under 1643-160, the test he would apply is the Carlson test from 919 P. Second 1337, the case you mentioned before, correct?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, yes, that is my understanding.
Follow-up? Actually, for the commissioner, through the chair. Commissioner, I want to take us back to why we're here. You need money to regulate and enforce logbooks to meet obligations under treaties. Is the bill as situated, as amended, though, by fisheries, and I guess by Representative Carpenter, but at any rate, is the bill as it's situated now, does it provide the funding you need to do the logbook regulation?
It doesn't make up the entire cost, but we are able to secure some additional funding through federal grants from the Halibut Commission to make up that difference, so it does. Now, the key question comes down to is if it starts expanding and going into freshwater, as the bill is amended now, that gives me that capability, then that would be a different analysis that I'd have to undertake. And through the chair, I just want to say I'm just not that familiar with how CFEC sets the non-resident surcharge through their process, and I could get familiar with that. I'm just not that familiar with how they do that on an annual basis.
I guess, Madam Co-Chair, and I'm sorry to make this more difficult, but I mean, I'm not asking the bill be held up. I'm just positing that I don't know how much money would be raised from either the Rasmussen or Wool amendments, and whether it's needed, and what any surplusage the commissioner would be receiving, and what he can do with that extra dollar. I don't really know that. So I'm a little bit into guesswork here. But I've been to this place before. So.
Thank you, Representative Josephson. Representative Wool.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess I want to ask Mr. Bullard about this challenge, the case that Representative Josephson just made reference to. So you're saying there have been legal challenges, and you're defending against that. Was this to non-resident fees for licenses?
Representative Wohl, through the chair, the Carlson cases, there are three of them, concerned a fees for non-resident individuals for commercial fishing entry permits and interim use entry permits.
Follow up?
Oh, thank you. So as I'm learning, there's a different fee for out-of-state commercial fishermen issued by CFEC, and we don't know what that rate is, but it was somehow determined that it's a cost burden on the state to have out-of-state people fishing in excess of managing for in-state fishermen. I'm sort of in a quandary. I guess if you really think the other bill will be challenged, or this amendment will make the bill challengeable and put it at jeopardy, I don't want to do that. I guess no one's sued over the big game guide. And I think every law we pass is subject to a potential lawsuit. It happens all the time. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't really have any more comments. I don't know if anyone else does. But
Representative Carpenter.
I think one of the pertinent questions here is how many out-of-state guides did we have in 2019 maybe or 2020? And then we could probably do some simple math to understand what that revenue might be like.
Commissioner?
Yeah, through the chair. So, and we have some quick and dirty things that we've done here. So in 2020, resident licenses by businesses were 90, combination were 904, and then the guides were 922. For that same year for non-residents, there were 29 businesses, 133 combinations, and 726 guides. And if you average those over a five-year period of time, those numbers are for businesses, for residents, 103, 950 for combination, and guides were 1,153. Now those numbers are going to be a little bit higher because 2020 was the COVID year. So. And then in terms of non-residents, it was 33 businesses, 150 combinations, and 975 guides.
Representative Carpenter, would you like a moment?
So, I'm not sure which number to use there. It's not sitting in front of me. But if I use the last number that you gave me, which was an average of non-resident.
There were 29 businesses, 133 combination, and 726. The averages were 33, 150, and 976.
Brief at ease. Finance, back on the record. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Kutcher. So the document that's provided that everyone has now shows that there at the on the bottom of the page, the chart that is titled Non-Resident Licenses Registrations Issued by Type and Year for 2016 to 2020 has a sum total down there of 268,000. And the increase would be 50% of that because that reflects the $400 fee that's in the bill. Yeah. So that's what the total revenue would be. The increase would be 50%.
Thank you. Representative Rasmussen.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I will withdraw the conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two.
Thank you. With that, conceptual amendment number one to amendment number two has been withdrawn. Representative Edgman.
Well, through the co-chair, I joined this discussion late, so hopefully I'm not too far off base, but just very quickly, it just seems to me that sitting here, we're not going to determine what the legal risk would be, and there's no way we could, even if we had a stable full of lawyers here advising us. But it just seems to me that we would not be the only state that would have this differential in place versus residents and non-residents, at least from what I know. And then understanding the Carlson case and the differential that's attached there are for residents and non-residents. For one member, I think I'm willing to take the risk that that may come with adopting the amendment, the underlying amendment. So I just put that out there. And I don't know, Madam Co-Chair, if the Commissioner could opine on whether other states have something similar or whether Alaska would be out there all by itself, which I don't think it would be.
Yeah, through the chair, I think other states, I haven't done a comprehensive assessment of it, do have differential rates for resident and non-residents for different kinds of activities. Obviously, we have one for big game guide servicing right now. I'm going to go off on a little bit of a tangent here, but as I was talking, it's quite likely if the law was challenged, the only outcome of that challenge likely would be that the non-resident additional piece would be repealed and everybody would be ordered to go back to the resident surcharge, whatever that resident licensing fee is until the court case be demonstrated. So you wouldn't lose the entire law, you'd probably just lose that piece of it that had the differential surcharge above it.
And also, if I may add.
Yes, follow up.
The Carlson case, I think we had to pay back, right?
Yes.
A fair amount, and I was on the committee at the time, so that might be a part of the risk.
Yeah.
Thank you. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm looking at this email that was distributed with the two sets of numbers for resident licenses issued and non-residence license issued with the average and the revenue. So I don't know if this is actual revenue you received or is this calculating what it would be if we doubled the fees, because the top section totaling 326,000 is based on a business license of 200, a combo license of 200, and a guide license of $100 if you do the math, and the lower half has all those doubled, 400, 400, 200. So is this already been enacted? Or is this what a projection of what it would be?
Through the chair, this is a projection of what it would be if it was 2-1.
Thank you.
Differential.
Follow up.
Yes, follow up.
So if I look at the two different numbers, the 326 and the 268, it's about $60,000 difference, even by doubling all those fees. So it's money. It's not over 100 like we thought a second ago. But I guess I sort of back up what Representative Edgman says of rolling dice, and the Carlson case denied a 3x non-resident charge. This is a 2x non-resident charge. It's in a lot of other, I know just because it's in another law doesn't make it legal, but I'm okay with it. I don't know about the committee or others.
Thank you, Representative Wohl. Is there further discussion on amendment number two? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Representative Rasmussen.
I think that Amendment number three serves a very similar purpose in giving the discretion of the department to increase a higher fee, and according to Department of Law and Ledge Legal, it poses less risk of potential lawsuit, and I think that we should consider the legality of the statutes and try to avoid any risk that we can.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and I appreciate the comments from Representative Rasmussen. I don't really want to put the burden, you know, have the department do a whole regulatory process, have to assess what the difference would be to manage an out-of-state guide versus an in-state guide. I don't know what that process is. They may only say it's, you know, 10% more or 8% more or something like that. They probably have to justify all their numbers. I find it simpler just to put a times two, and there's precedent for all kinds of licenses and fees that do that for non-residents, so I still feel comfortable with it. And going through the regulatory process maybe once, maybe more than once, public comment, I don't know, maybe public comment will be overwhelmingly in support, especially if it's Alaskans that are commenting, but anyhow, that's all.
Thank you. Further discussion, Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, did I hear correctly a few minutes ago where you were saying that you had sufficient revenue sources to administer this program without having to increase these fees?
Through the chair, what I said is that we have insufficient revenues without any surcharge. If the differential between the resident and non-resident went away, we would make that up with different funding sources from federal funding sources. So it's that $100,000, $125,000 difference in the bottom line that I was talking to, not the entire bill.
Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you have funding sources to make up any shortfall from the federal whatever program. So the need for additional revenue through these amendments is not compelling for the department.
And that's so long as we're only instituting the saltwater logbook program. Now you've given me the authority to do that in freshwater on a case-by-case basis. We would use these revenues to pay for that in the event that we needed to institute a freshwater logbook.
Follow up?
I guess I'm looking for a little guidance or a recommendation. Do you want this amendment, or do you feel it's necessary?
Through the chair, it's entirely your decision as to whether you're going to offer a differential rate to residents versus non-residents. If you want to provide more money, there's different ways of doing that. This is one mechanism of doing it. I'm not going to enter into whether this is the best mechanism or not. So.
Very diplomatic. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and thanks to everyone for the discussion. As the commissioner mentioned, by adopting amendment number one, which allows the department to regulate freshwater fishing logbooks, it would add an extra expense, I think. And the number of guides, I don't know about everyone here, but when I heard there's 976 out-of-state guides and 1,100 in-state guides, that's almost equal numbers. Now, the combo difference is more drastic, as is the business, but just standalone guides, there's almost as many out-of-state as in-state. So I was a little surprised to see that. And if this added revenue will help pay for freshwater guidebook work, I think that's all the more reason to pass it.
Thank you. Further discussion on amendment number two. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, and I think maybe the last question to ask the commissioner, since we have him here in person, is with the increase in non-resident fees, you know, the theory of supply and demand, would this have some impact on the number of non-resident participation? And I know you can probably only just sort of posit some, you know, an answer, but, you know, is it within the margin, or is this going to have a substantial impact on the behavior of non-resident participation?
So, through the chair, when we raised license fees on sport fishermen, we saw a drop of about 5 to 10% immediately by the thing. In this case, what you're talking about is for a person who's getting a paycheck to come and participate as a guide. You're talking about doubling it from $100 to $200. I don't think you'd see that substantial of a decrease in coming to Alaska to participate in that. And for a business, it's going from an additional $200. I think there would probably be some businesses that would choose not to, but I don't think it would be a substantial number.
Thank you. Any further discussion on amendment number two? Representative Carpenter.
Thank you. The additional funds that you would receive based on this change, the 2-to-1, how close does that get you to fully funding your program? And I would say just with the salt water, because the fresh water is unknown at this point.
It gets us much closer. Almost fully funded.
Thank you. Anything further? Representative Rasmussen, do you maintain your objection?
I'll withdraw my objection.
Thank you. Further objection? Seeing none, amendment number two has been adopted. That takes us to amendment number three. Representative Rasmussen, do you have a motion?
I am not going to move amendment number three. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
Amendment number three has been withdrawn. Is there anything further to discuss on House Bill 79? Seeing none, Mr. Co-Chair, do I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 79, version 32-GH1608/B from committee as amended with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make confirming changes.
Representative Johnson. Okay. Thank you. Further debate? Will the secretary please call the roll?
Representative Josephson?
Yes.
Representative Laban?
Yes.
Representative Ortiz?
Yes.
Representative Rasmussen?
Yes.
Representative Thompson?
Yes.
Representative Wool?
Yes.
Representative Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Edgman?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Merrick?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
Yes.
10 yeas, 1 nay.
And with a vote of 10 yeas and 1 nay, House Bill 79 as amended is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. Finally, today is House Bill 80, Sport Fish Hatchery Facility Account Surcharge. There are three amendments before the committee. We are first considering amendment number one by Representative Ortiz. Representative, is there a motion?
Madam Chair, I withdraw amendment number one.
With that, amendment number one has been withdrawn. Amendment number two by Representative Carpenter. Is there a motion, Representative Carpenter?
Madam Co-Chair, due to action that was taken in another bill, I'll make the committee's day by not moving this amendment.
With that, amendment number two has been withdrawn. Representative Ortiz, is there a motion for amendment number three?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number three.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, what this amendment does is it's a good faith effort to try to address some of the concerns that were raised by members of this committee as well as by the commissioner in my original amendment number one. This amendment changes some language in section one of the bill, specifically on line eight, by replacing shall allocate with may use. The department has a bit more flexibility with funds in this account, which is something they requested. The second part of the amendment, Madam Chair, serves to further specify that funds generated from sport fish license sales will benefit sports fisheries management and research. The last part of my amendment creates a sub-account within the sports fish enhancement account to which 30% of the sports fish license surcharge after the $2.50 is taken out for research, invasive species management, and habitat restoration will be deposited for use in the Southeast region. The remaining 70% will be available for other regions of the state. This alleviates the concern the Department of Fish and Game had with our old amendment that would bind them to not being able to use money elsewhere. As always, the legislature appropriates money, and if they need to use some of the sports fish license surcharge being put forward in the Southeast Sports Fishing Enhancement subaccount, they can certainly put that request forward in their budget documents. So thank you for that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Ortiz. Further discussion on amendment number three. Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just asking for a little clarification. So this is the additional charge that will go on the licenses. I think it was $9 reduced to $4, if I remember correctly. And of that additional charge, 30% will go to a sub-account for Southeast and 70% for other regions. Does this, the last meeting the commissioner said that spending 1 year might be high in one area and then low and then, you know, one place needed a new raceway and so on. Would this allocation inhibit that kind of behavior of being able to do a large project in one area 1 year and then move it to a different area another year? I know there was some time considerations, and I don't know, does this amendment work around those kind of time project considerations?
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Wohl, that's certainly my intent with this change in the language, was to give more flexibility to the department to be able to operate in the way that they were concerned about maybe not being able to operate with my original amendment number one. But I'll let the commissioner speak to that.
A quick follow-up.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So is the language may is what gives them that flexibility? So the may applies to all the apportionment and so on. So it's more of a guide than an absolute mandatory spending. Okay.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Through the chair, yes, that's my reading of the legislation. Of the amendment. The one thing that I would point out in both sections A and B is it's and the maintenance and operation of hatchery facilities, and then second under B it says state hatchery facilities. We could only expend money, since this is going into the Fish and Game Fund, for the maintenance and operation of hatchery facilities that directly benefit sport fishermen. We couldn't, for instance, fund DIPEC, since it's going into the Fish and Game Fund to primarily produce chum salmon. So because this is in the Fish and Game Fund, I think that reasoning is embedded into this amendment. But I just want to be clear that my read of this is that we would be able to maintain and operate hatcheries that directly benefit sport fishing.
Thank you. Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at the bottom of the amendment, where it references 30% to be deposited into the subaccount, and that's targeted for the southeast region. Would that be a correct conclusion?
That's correct.
And then right below it, under item B, it says 70% for use in other regions. Are we talking about Fairbanks and Anchorage as defining those other regions, the two hatcheries in Fairbanks and Anchorage?
Through the chair, that's my interpretation of this, yes, because those two hatcheries serve pretty much the rest of the state. They don't serve southeast.
So follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So division within the division, there is none. So it's not 35% for the hatchery in Fairbanks and 35 for Anchorage. It's up to you to decide year by year how that 70% gets divided up, but you have a 30% dedicated piece to southeast, and that's not open for discussion.
The way I read this amendment is that there'd be a subaccount of this, of the $4 that would go into southeast, 30% would go in southeast. My intent, or the direction that I'm getting from you, is to use 30% of that subaccount to fund activities in southeast Alaska. So currently we spend someplace on the order of $860,000 in southeast Alaska between the existing surcharge and DJ and PR funds that we would start paying for with the surcharge, and be able to build up enough to basically over time have a pot of money to pay for the maintenance of the hatcheries that are producing those fish, like at Crystal Lake.
If I could follow up on the same line, then thank you, Commissioner. So should it be 35% for both Fairbanks hatchery and the Anchorage hatchery to be consistent with an allocation to a region?
Through the chair, I prefer the language of 70% between those two hatcheries, not to give a half and half to each one of those hatcheries. There's different maintenance and different operational costs. And I wouldn't want to do it by the percentage of anglers in an area, for instance. That would not be fair. The cost of Fairbanks would be higher than the percentage of anglers. In the 30% number, I think, comes from discussions that we had had in fisheries that said approximately 25 to 29% of the anglers or licenses bought by non-residents were from Southeast Alaska. And that's how I think the 30% number kind of came here. Those people buying licenses in Southeast weren't getting a direct benefit from the two hatcheries in Anchorage and Fairbanks.
So I guess one last
comment.
So this is to protect the interests of Southeast because of the number of licenses or percentage of licenses purchased in that region. But the other two regions, or if you call it the other two hatcheries, Fairbanks and Anchorage, that's commingled into one big pot, and then you will decide how those monies are allocated per year?
That's correct. But the intent, I can't speak to the intent of the motion. That's your guys' intent.
Thank you.
Can I speak to that?
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, if you the original fees that were charged to the licenses were originally set to pay off bonds for the two facilities, the construction of the two facilities in Anchorage and the one in Fairbanks. And so the history showed of how those fees were expended, the history shows that they were largely, to a very, very large degree, spent only in Fairbanks and the Anchorage area. And so once those bonds were paid off, that's what we felt like, okay, the bonds are paid off now, so now can we start getting some direction of funds going in the direction of the region where close to a third of the money is generated from in sports or in license sales. So now that we move forward, can we make sure and see that those facilities get some attention now as we move forward?
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that explanation. So Are you confident then that the allocation of 30% of these fees to the Southeast region is adequate for the need, or if the need isn't as pressing and it's not necessary to spend all 30% of the allocation, does that money just lapse in an account and grow over time, or can the money be moved to support maybe a greater need in one of the other hatcheries, or is it locked into that region?
So from my read of this, it's into that account, but the key word says may be used only in Southeast Alaska. So I guess if there wasn't a need in Southeast Alaska and the pot grew so big, it could be used in other areas at the legislature's discretion.
Yeah, so just to clear, it is dedicated to Southeast, but it may be used for other regions.
May only be used in the only. Southeast region, and so it didn't say shall be only used. So the intent is, I think you look at the numbers here, you're talking about, I think it was $1.6 million or $1.4 million about that would be raised, 30% of what the fees would be raised would be there. So we're spending $860,000, and we would be able to continue that using that surcharge. So there might be another $400,000 in that account in a given year. Crystal Lake, for instance, has a $2.5 million deferred maintenance need. It would take us a couple of years to grow that account to get to that point to be able to make that maintenance cost. So that would allow us to continue to maintain the infrastructure that we're funding through the surcharge to produce those fish. I don't know whether it's going to be too high or too low, but it's probably going to be, it sounds about right based on what's contributed in terms of the current expenditure we're giving down there and what I see as some longer term deferred maintenance needs.
Yeah, follow up?
One other follow up, or maybe two. So I represent downtown Fairbanks. The Ruth Burnett Hatchery is in my district. But that's not the only reason I'm concerned about how it would be treated under this. The fishing interest, sports fishing interest of Interior Alaska is supported by that hatchery. How do I protect the sports fishing interest of Interior Alaska with the language that doesn't dedicate money to that hatchery like we are dedicating to the Southeast program?
Guess you have to take my word that we're going to maintain that hatchery. We have an infrastructure at that hatchery that we're going to maintain. We potentially see the need in the next 5 to 10 years of putting PFAS filters on there. That's an incredibly of all the hatcheries that are in the state of Alaska, it's probably the most complex hatchery in terms of water quality treatment facilities, and we have ongoing maintenance associated with that. So I see that we're going to have to do maintenance at that facility, and we're going to be splitting that between Fairbanks and Anchorage over time.
And I appreciate that answer, but I guess there's a little bit of apples and oranges here. There's a dedicated purpose for 30% of the money to a region, but the other two, and I keep referring as two other regions. You have Anchorage and Fairbanks. In my thinking, it's Interior and South Central. There's no dedication to those two regions. It's up to your process to allocate the 70% remaining, and that just seems to be like there's two messages there. And that's just my comment. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We have Representative Johnson, Carpenter, and Josephson. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a couple of my questions have kind of been answered, but I'm trying to envision how this would work. So do you have, when you have the funds where you're just managing, or would be managing these funds, do you typically do a large project maybe on one hatchery or one area 1 year and then maybe go do something another year? I mean, what I'm trying to get to is, I mean, are we dividing this up and as a result not allowing for monies to be shifted and to actually have management that needs to be done across the state that may not be, while it may be that the intent is to do 30% of the work in Southeast, it may not all be done at once, and therefore have money in one fund that's not available to be used for another.
Through the chair, so I think the difference is in how we produce fish in Southeast Alaska versus the rest of the state. In the rest of the state, we chose to build two hatcheries, and we have a hatchery unit that services those two hatcheries and operates them and maintains them. We do it through a stocking plan and a variety of other things. In Southeast Alaska, we didn't build a hatchery. We basically instead decided to use state facilities that are run by PNPs across the state, and we fund them to produce the fish. It just seemed to be a better approach in Southeast Alaska. So as a result of that, we ended up, when we collected the surcharge to pay for the two hatcheries in Anchorage, there was a desire by Southeast legislators, probably understandably, that their anglers were paying into the surcharge but weren't getting a direct benefit. So at that time, we took money out of the surcharge that we've been collecting all that time to pay for those two hatcheries and funded these activities in Southeast Alaska in addition with some other money that we had. So I think it's really how we decided to benefit sport anglers through either a construction and operation of a hatchery or by doing it through by contract to other people. In Southeast Alaska, we're doing it by contract. And this was one way to ensure that in any given year, all the money didn't come out of Southeast Alaska to go pay for some operations and maintenance of hatcheries in Anchorage and Fairbanks, and that there wasn't enough money to continue that long-term contractual obligation to produce fish in Southeast. I hope that helps.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. One line of question, 30% to Southeast. How many hatcheries will that money go to support?
We have a couple facilities. For instance, we're doing with Crystal Lake, we're supporting that operation, and that produces king salmon and some coho salmon. DIPEC up here is doing some king salmon releases for us, so we contract with them. We also have some production at Shenisam. So it's on a case-by-case basis as to how we produce the fish with the private nonprofit hatcheries down here. We let them kind of choose where the facility should be that's producing those fish. So I can't say that for the next 10 years we're going to use X, Y, and Z hatcheries, but we're going to contract with them to keep that level of production going and potentially, with this pot of money, expand it a little bit, provide some additional sport fishing opportunity down here. In Anchorage and Fairbanks, we're going to continue to rely on the Anchorage and Fairbanks hatcheries to produce those fish.
Okay. Follow up?
Yes, follow up.
Different line of thinking here. And I understand the concept of trying to fairly distribute the money, and I appreciate the intent here. I think there's some other risk here that we ought to consider. Madam Co-Chair, could we ask for a legal opinion on both the splitting of the money here, 30-70, and also the creation of sub-accounts as far as the constitutionality goes in regards to dedicated funds?
Yes, Representative Carpenter. Let's take a brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. We now have Alpheus Bullard from Legislative Legal Online. Representative Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And Alpheus, thanks for joining us again. I have a question, kind of a two-part question concerning the amendment before us, amendment number three, and the distribution, as the amendment says, of 30-70% and also of the sub-account in regards to constitutionality of dedicated funds. And I just want to get a legal opinion on that. Thank you.
Mr. Bullard.
The chair, once again. Members of the committee, House, Representative Carpenter, through the chair, this is Alpheus Bullard of Ledge Legal. I'm not sure what amendment you have in front of you. You're calling it Amendment 3. What does it say in the top right corner, please?
Yes, thank you. It's 32-GH1609/B8.
Thank you. So you're asking about the constitutionality of the sub-account created by this amendment to House Bill 80?
Yes, sir. Are we creating a dedicated account that will be considered a dedicated account? Thank you.
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, this amendment would establish a dedicated sub-account within a dedicated account within the dedicated fund, which is the Fish and Game Fund. The Fish and Game Fund is a constitutionally dedicated fund because it's required for participation in federal programs, but the federal government does not require us to further dedicate the revenue within the Fish and Game Fund to particular purposes, whether they be hatcheries in Southeast Alaska or sport fishing generally. So it is my legal opinion that both the account within the dedicated fund and the sub-account created by this amendment to House Bill 80 would both be unconstitutionally dedicated accounts.
They would be constitutionally dedicated accounts, meaning it would be a constitutional dedication or an unconstitutional dedication of funds.
Representative Carpenter, through the chair, forgive me. That dedicating this account and the sub-account within the account would be unconstitutional under the state constitution.
Thank you. Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Bullard, you're saying the amendment you drafted at the request of Representative Ortiz is an unconstitutional amendment?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, it is my legal opinion that if the federal government does not require us to dedicate the funds, that we cannot use the Fish and Game Fund, a constitutionally dedicated fund, to constitutionally dedicate revenues to further purposes that the federal government does not require us to dedicate them to.
Follow up? I guess I'm confused. I'm aware that the Fisheries Fund is a dedicated fund, in part because it predates statehood, correct?
Representative Josephson, it is a constitutionally permissible fund because its existence is required in certain federal programs.
Follow up? And this sub-account doesn't mean that a future legislature couldn't revise this bill and create a different use of the money. It's just that teachers and school districts couldn't use this money for teaching in school districts, right? I thought we were compliant with the dedication provision as long as these resources were used for fisheries. Am I wrong about that?
So maybe this is Doug Vincent-Lang. Maybe I can add a bit of insight here. So When the Dingell Johnson and PR funds became available, there was a requirement that license fees had to be used to match that, and it went to a vote of the people to dedicate the license revenue into the Fish and Game Fund. So it became an amendment to the Constitution per se to dedicate the Fish and Game Fund to basically be able to use to match those federal funds, and it became a dedicated fund. You can't use money from that fund to go do teaching or to build highways or other things. It's a dedicated fund that was voted on by the people of Alaska to amend the Constitution to allow it to occur.
Representative Josephson.
Madam Chair, I don't know that I've recommended this before, so I don't do it too often, but I think I would recommend that the bill be held to iron out and revisit what Mr. Bullard said, because I don't know that I understand what he said.
Thank you. Representative Ortiz.
Madam Chair, rather than hold up the bill any further, I think if this issue needs to be addressed, it can be addressed in the other body, and I'll just, what I attempted to do with this particular amendment, if that needs to be addressed in the other body, then I'll let them do it, but I'll just withdraw the amendment at this time.
With that, amendment number 3 has been withdrawn. Representative Wohl. Anything further?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I had questions to the commissioner relating to this amendment, but if it's withdrawn, I will withdraw my questions.
Thank you. With that, it takes us to the bill itself. And I see no further discussion. And with that, Mr. Co-Chair, do I have a motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 80, version 32-GH 1609/B from committee with individual recommendations as amended. Not amended.
Sorry,
Madam Chair.
Remove my objection to the bill itself. Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 80, version 32-GH 1609/B from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Seeing none, House Bill 80 is moved from committee. Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. This concludes this afternoon's agenda. Our next meeting is tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. where we will hear House Bill 81, Modifying Net Profit Share Oil and Gas Leases. We'll take public testimony on Senate Bill 19, Extending the Special Education Services Agency. And we'll continue House Bill 55, Peace Officer Firefighter Retirement Benefits. And with that, at 3:07, we are adjourned. Thank you.